Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post his alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Hey everybody, welcome to D&D Encounters, Season 13, Storm Over Neverwinter, Session 8, the final session of the season. Tonight
Woo!
We have Craig.
Grand finale! Woo!
Yeah, grand finale was great. We talk about Eye in the Storm, and Derek and Craig, as you can hear, are with me again. How are you guys doing this evening?
Pretty good, pretty good. How about you?
Very, very well. Derek?
No, I'm doing great.
Excellent. I won't tell you the Boston score, so don't worry about it. Yeah, shh, I know.
Although we are looking at it right now.
Oh, no, I'm not watching it because I'd be too distracted.
Anyway, back to the show.
Yeah, back to the show. Back to the show. All right. Storm Over Neverwinter, season finale. First of all, I want to get a yay or nay from all three of you. So I say totally yay.
Yay.
What are we yaying or naying?
The finale.
Just whether we liked it or not?
Yes.
Yes, definitely. Thumbs up. Yay for sure.
Excellent. So,
and I want to say that, you know, we spoke in the early weeks about some of the things that we were not necessarily loving about the adventure. And I kept saying every week, don't worry, it's building. It's building. The finale will make up for any shortcomings. And at least with the groups I played with, it absolutely did. This everything was building to this and it didn't disappoint.
I agree. I made a few changes myself, which made a great evening. Craig, your initials for your run?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it went really well. Unfortunately, our table suffered a TPK, so it wasn't a happy ending for them. But yeah, I mean, overall, like I know we were talking earlier about some of the issues we were having, but again, like Derek said, I feel like this whole second chapter, and especially at the end, really kind of underscored a lot of the season as a whole, and it kind of all put it into perspective.
All right, since you're on that topic, since you talk about just TPK at your table, tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so basically, the party started out, and to start with, we were already down one man, so it was a four-man table, and I'm playing the fourth edition rules, just for anyone who is unsure. But anyway, we're down a man, and so I already had to, had to keep in mind how am I going to adjust this. So I was removing some damage from what I was doing, and I wasn't using all their encounter powers. I was trying to make it just a little bit easier. We had a couple of newer guys at the table. It started out great. I thought, after a little bit, I was like, wow, I didn't even really need to pare this down. These guys are totally going to steamroll it. They started out with a bit of the roleplay interaction with Vargas. One of the players is one that I mentioned in the previous sessions where he's playing an evil aligned character. He decided in a dramatic fashion, with Vargas focused on his wife, warning them. He's like, I don't have a beef with you, but I'm going to, stick here and I'm going to do this, so leave me alone. He decided that he was going to dramatically rip open his shirt and show off his Mark of Asmodeus. But it was really funny. But, the other players, although the players themselves knew, the characters didn't. So it was, this moment of dramatic revelations for everyone. But then, of course, I know it wasn't supposed to happen till later, but I was like, you know what? This is perfect.
So, course, as soon as you said that, I'm like, I know where this is going.
Yeah. I was like, oh, no, this is too perfect. So, of course, then Vargas himself rips his shirt off to expose his branding of
Oh my gosh.
Mine's bigger.
Yeah, it was a moment like that. So it was a lot of fun playing with that.
D&D Encounters Session 8 Finale. Magic Mike strikes again.
Yeah, that's right. it was a little bit of that going on, but he started talking to him about, the cult of Asmodeus, and but of course the player didn't actually know a lot of the backstory with Vargas, and he kind of made some assumptions about what he's fully into the cult of Asmodeus. So he went on with it, and I tried to draw some information of like if he's working with Mordai Vel and things like that. He didn't really bite at that stuff because I thought that's the perfect sinker, because if you know the background of Vargas, he's not too happy with Mordai Vel, that's the reason his wife is in the state she is in right now. So that the interaction went on a little bit, and I had to pretty much laid on that, like, he was willing to talk to him, he's willing to hear him out, but he won't budge on leaving his wife and not doing it this way. He is convinced that the only way to save her now is for her to consume the power of the storm. So the talk eventually broke down and led into combat. But the other players, because these guys were having this big interaction with their shirts torn open and heaving chests and whatnot. But the other players decided to go out and inspect the area while this was going on. So they found the hatch with the grappling hook and, you know, they kind of got a lay of the land, what was going on, and were able to make some arcana checks and find out exactly what's happening here. She's doing this ritual. She's consuming some of the storm. They were noticing that, there's these huge updrafts that are violently coming up, but it looks like that they might be able to manipulate this to their favor, which unfortunately they never, through the course of the combat, they never actually took advantage of that. I don't think anyone was too keen to put that to the test. I kept trying to bring it in that you can use this without actually, outright saying, you guys can just ride the wind and fly anywhere. So, but whatever, they didn't want to do it. But when combat finally broke out, they focused right away on Vargas. And I tell you, within just a couple of rounds, he was just down and out. They locked him down. He was immobilized. They had the defender right up there and the defender's aura on, and he could not do anything. He was just completely out of screwed. He got taken out really quick, and I thought, okay, well, this is pretty much it. These guys are going to totally nail him. But then one of the players decided to split apart from the party and decided to act in a different way than the others were prepared for. And that kind of scattered them. And they, at this point, they weren't focusing on any one target. A couple of them were trying to maybe see if there's any way that they could bring down Karis. Mm-hmm. So I know in the rules, in the way it's written, she's not supposed to be able to move from her spot. But I figured, we have four people here, and, a couple of these guys are ranged, but there's a couple of melee guys. I don't want to have them just sitting doing nothing, really, right, with those two flying creatures around. So, they wanted to check and see if they could do it. They're making these knowledge checks. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. It looks like you'd be able to get a hold of her. You might be able to yank her down. She is in the middle of this ritual, but now she's enraged because, you just dropped her husband and she's clearly lost all control. So you might be able to dislodge her. But the players were kind of working against each other. They would, out of character, they would suggest, no, we don't want to do that. Don't waste your time with that. So it was a lot of bickering. And it was to the point where I kind of felt that, as we were going on, I was trying to make strategic moves in the way that I didn't want to just outright obliterate them, which of course you could, right? But in this case, I was trying to make a Chartilifax move back and forth and not focus too much on anyone, and having Karis, not using her like really super powerful bolts, but just focusing on one at a time. But no, these guys, they just weren't focusing. In the end, basically, it kind of came down to if I want these guys to live and be successful, I pretty much have to stop making attacks. So it was unfortunate. I mean, their resources were low, so it was difficult to begin with. They unfortunately met a poor end, but I did come up with an ending that, I hope, satisfied it for everyone. Of course, there were some consequences to this. I don't know if we want to talk about the ending now.
Yeah,
or
let's talk about the ending later. Yeah.
Sure.
Let's recap all of them, and then we'll talk compare endings. So I'll jump in next then. So
sure.
I actually had a chance to do this encounter twice. The first time as a player, and then the second time as a DM, both with 4th edition rules. Now, as I've mentioned before this season, I've been trying not to read the adventure each week until I have a chance to play it. That way, when I use it as a player, I don't have to worry about meta knowledge. I can actually go in and do what I want to do and not feel like I'm influencing the actions based on what I know. I mean, obviously, I have a hint of what's happening because I did read it when I first got it, but like now that's been 2 months ago. I forget. So we only had, we were playing where Craig was playing, so it was two groups of four. We only had 10 bodies, two DMs, and four players at each table. So myself and one of the other characters were coming into this with just under full hit points and one healing surge left. We had two players who had not been there in a few weeks show up, so they were basically coming in fresh, and that certainly helped. We had three strikers and a defender. it was not pretty. Now to add to you know, just another element into here, the DM who was running the table for us, this is his first time running a season of Encounters. My understanding is he's not had many opportunities to be a DM in his home game either, so he's still a relatively new DM. And I've been trying to offer suggestions and not be overly critical. I mean, there's a lot of times when you play with a DM, especially a DM who has less experience, where you sort of want to say, well, I would have done that differently, or I wouldn't have done that particular thing, or, you know, whatever. But at the same time, I just wanted to try and enjoy it as a player. Unfortunately, the DM misread and misunderstood some of the things in the adventure, which made the monsters more powerful. For example, Vargas has an at-will power that he can use either as a melee attack or a ranged attack. But when I finally, after the battle, and when I was preparing to run it as the DM, I read the stat block, I could see how he would get confused. So he was attacking twice every round, and the power does a lot of damage, and he kept hitting with it. So that unfortunately was bad news for the party. His monsters rolled amazing initiatives. So at the start of the encounter, we had the assassin. He basically came out, looked around, found the hatch, opened it up, found the rope, tied himself off. That was all his actions. Then my character went next, and again, not really understanding what was going on, I decided to try and talk to Vargas. And so I rolled a diplomacy check, rolled a natural 20. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm awesome. And so I got him to tell us some info, no problem. And then before I had a chance to potentially do any actual actions other than the talking, the DM moved right on to the initiative. And I wasn't really thinking that this was going to be a bad problem, but all of the monsters went next. So it was Vargas, then Karis, then the dragon. And the party was still clumped together, and everybody hit all of us. Vargas took two attacks, which in retrospect, he should have only had one. The dragon used his breath weapon, and Karis used the zone. We were crushed in the first round. Everyone in the party was bloodied. Everyone had less than 10 hit points left. Like, before some of the party had even acted, they were like, wow, I'm down like to a handful of hit points. The first three rounds of combat, the battle mind did nothing but heal himself and other characters. His very first turn, he's like, I mark Vargas, I use my second win, I draw a healing potion. Next turn, I administer the healing potion to this unconscious ally, I draw another healing potion, and I drink it myself. Uh-huh. It was totally that kind of fight. It was tough. And the DM kept rolling amazing attack rolls. He recharged that dragon's breath weapon three times in a row, and the party was slowed, so we couldn't get far enough away, and he kept hitting all of us. Oh, it was awful. It was so awful. And, I mean, if I had been the DM, I might have, you know, to Craig's point, it's easy to kill the party. Sometimes you have to do the wrong thing to give the party a fighting chance, and it was just like, oh, my God, this sucks. And, yeah, it was really challenging. But knowing that it was going to clearly end in a TPK, the players ended up doing a lot of creative things to just try and get something out of it. I know with my monk character, once I finally shrugged off the slow, I used a power to fly, and I got onto the back of the dragon, and then when I made an attack, I rolled a 19 on the dice, so I did a crazy amount of damage, and then the DM was like, okay, make an acrobatic check to see if you can stay on him, because he's going to be like a bucking bronco, right? He's going to try and get you off. He's going to try and get me off.
I'm thinking that.
Yeah.
PG, and PG.
Yeah, my acrobatics check was like over 30. So I'm like, look, acro's my best skill. I'm not falling off. But then on the next round, the DM's basically like, the dragon turns upside down and flies intentionally onto the ground and smushes you, and you take a whole bunch of damage and fall off his back, and he flies away. And it's like, oh, man, like, come on. Like, I just couldn't buy a win. But the only thing that kept us going, aside from the fact that the new characters actually had healing potions, was I rolled two natural 20s on death saves while I was unconscious, which I've never had that happen before. I've rolled a natural 20 before, but the fact that I rolled two and two consecutive times was awesome. And we had to look it up. If your character is out of surges and you get healing, you are revived to one hit point. So even though I had no surges and I was negative hit points, I rolled natural 20, boom, one hit point, back in the fight for one round. And then, of course, I took damage, and the next round, natural 20, boom, back in the fight again. One hit point.
Epic.
But, yeah, the DM, basically by the end, the DM said, he goes, I'm not doing as much damage as, like, I think most of the monsters did 2D whatever. He was only doing the 1D whatever, but it was still more than enough to crush this party. But yeah, like about a half an hour in, it was clear it was going to kill this party. So he started to really pull back just to let us win, which, you know, it's nice to win, but at the same time, we didn't really earn that win. So it was sort of a hollow victory. But I was able to take some of that away when I was running it, at the second group. And I sort of went, okay, well, now that I've seen how this encounter plays out and I can see where there's some really powerful things going on, what can I change to make it challenging, but not just overwhelming? And so when I ran it, we had a party of five. Two of the guys are controllers, and that's actually been a real issue for us because they don't do enough damage to any one creature. And so I thought, oh boy, they're going to be in for some real trouble this time around. But I basically slowed everything down. When the players arrived on the map, I had Vargas engage them in dialogue, and of course they immediately talked to him. And I had this go on for a couple of rounds, and I let them take actions. I'm like, okay, well, you're talking to him, but are you moving? Are you taking any other actions? And everyone sort of just was very cautious, but nobody attacked anybody else. I let the four of the five characters were trained in Arcana, so I let them all make a check to determine that the storm was, like, magical. They could, you know, call the lightning and use it to attack creatures. So they knew that that was a possibility, and, like, before any of the combat even started. So they sort of all went, oh, okay, we got this in our back pocket if we need it. I think it was the third round, I had all the characters make perception checks, and two of them rock the checks. I'm like, you hear the dragon Chertilifax cry out in the storm somewhere, and they're like, uh-oh. So they even though Vargas had been saying, stay where you are, go back downstairs, and they had been listening to him, as soon as one of the guys goes, the dragon's coming, they all scattered, and Vargas freaked out, and he started fighting them, and so that sort of initiated the combat. And then when I had the dragon show up, I had him do his breath weapon. I rolled randomly to see which side of the board he showed up from, and I had him do his breath weapon. Care if it was Vargas or Karras or any of the PCs. So we actually hit Vargas, Karras, and three of the five PCs in the first round. And then I had both Vargas and Karras become full combatants, but I had Karras roll randomly against targets every round, including Chertilifax, but excluding her husband. So again, it added a few extra elements to it, and I didn't have her use the zone power because I felt that it was way too powerful considering that the party was already hurt from the breath weapon. What was really interesting was the bard, after about the second or third round of fighting this dragon, like, the dragon has its full actions and then it has its flyby attacks, but basically it gets to go twice every round, and the party realized right away, they're like, we're going to get crushed. So they managed to slow it right away, which helped a lot. Then somebody immobilized it, which was great because it was until the end of the person's next round, not a save ends. So Chertilifax was basically useless because his breath weapon didn't recharge. So the bard decided, I'm going to talk to this dragon. She spoke Draconic, and she had a power that gave her a huge bonus on a diplomacy check. So she was rolling on, like, it was in the 20s before the dice even hit the table. It was 20 something, and she rolled like an 18 or 17 on the. It was like over 40 the total check, and she basically just said, like, why are you doing this? What's going on? And I had decided that Chertilifax had a dragon, or not dragon mark, a spell scar, or something that looked like a spell scar, which the bard had detected with a perception check. And so the bard basically said, like, hey, see this storm sorcerer? It seems like she's channeling the magic of the storm to cure herself of whatever is ailing her. Perhaps we can get her help when this is all over to figure out how she's done this and use it to cure you. And Chertilifax basically was like, you know, with that high diplomacy role, he's like, I believe you're sincere. I believe you will help me. Although I'm not always in control of my actions. I'm under the control of another. I will do what I can to leave you to this for now. And then, of course, she made a second diplomacy check the next round before the dragon took off. She's like, hey, since we're going to help you, we need to take control of the situation. You think you use your breath weapon and just knock people out for us? The dragon's like, yeah, sure, why not? So I had the dragon do a breath weapon on the two NPCs, which, again, helped drop the hit points pretty quick. But, by the end, basically what I had said was every time they called the lightning, it forced Karras to break, number one, break the ritual. And number two, it meant that she couldn't attack. Like, I was saying that she was channeling the power of the storm to make her attack actions. So if they had pulled the storm from her, she could, on her turn, basically suck it back in. And so that way she wasn't attacking them every round. And once they had sucked it out of her four times, I said, okay, that's enough. She, you know, I although she wasn't bloodied, I said it acted as if she was bloodied. She floated back down to the level. And then the next time they pulled the lightning out of her, the fifth time, I basically said that it like it pulled the power she'd been channeling was sort of, it sucked it out of her, but it also cured her at the same time. Like it was sort of like rebooting a computer. Like that's all it needed. That was the last jolt. And she fell back. And then, you know, on her next turn, she woke up and was, had come to her senses and the storm stopped. And, you know, it was clear at that point that it was just a race to zero hit points. And so I sort of worked in the story elements, even though the monsters hadn't all been defeated. Well, the monsters being Vargas and Karis. And they you know, were able to help the couple. I didn't like the idea that Vargas sort of went crazy at the end. So I just said that he was remorseful and that he was so overwhelmed with the wife's recovery that he submitted to whatever punishment they felt was necessary.
We're not talking endings yet. We're going to talk about the endings after, right?
Yeah. So that's sort of the first part of where we go with that. But anyway, enough of me. Mark, you did D&D next. How did it work with your group?
Well, mine was a little bit different. I tried to bring the story elements in, but nobody was biting. Nobody was doing arcana checks, even though I said that, you know, Karis is channeling the storm arcanely.
Doesn't get more obvious than that.
No, exactly. So that came about third or fourth round, right? But I did take everybody's suggestion last week that we talked about into consideration, and I did not bring Chartilifax back. I brought back what I call the Angels of Helm Guardian Gargoyles. It's kind of a little thing I made up myself. Anyway, so these characters go upstairs. They see Vargas. Vargas basically has these statues under his control. He knows the passphrase and everything like that. So this is what I had in my head with the characters coming up, that they did not know the passphrase for these Guardian Gargoyles. Now, these Guardian Gargoyles, what they do is they prevent people from committing suicide in Helm's Hold. So let's say a patient manages to get off the roof and they decide they want to commit suicide. Well, these guardian gargoyles are there to prevent these people from actually jumping off the building. So when they get close to the parapets at the side or anywhere around the crenellation on the roof, these guardian gargoyles basically animate and take the person, shove them down the stairs again, and lock the door behind them. So I decided to bring those guys into play, but I let them speak with Vargas first. It didn't go well. The wizard was just tired of speaking with Vargas because Vargas was doing this and that. Bang, combat started right away, and then first thing character does, goes right into the corner of the building. Gargoyles animate. So it was a lot of fun because I had made up a whole bunch of new little powers. I actually forgot to mention this when we were talking earlier, but I gave it a breath weapon. It could do a breath weapon as a standard, just as an action, which is D&D next.
Sorry, this is the gargoyles you're talking about?
Yeah, the gargoyles. So these are the powers that I gave them. I gave them resistance, half damage from non-magical weapons, which is just like any other stone creature. Hit points of 30. I gave them a melee breath weapon. So it's basically one square. They can only affect one square. It's not a burst or a blast or anything. It just affects one square of the creature they're trying to affect. The breath weapon can only come into play when the creature was grabbed. So as an action, they can grab the creature. Then what they can do is they can breathe on it to attempt to put the creature to sleep to make them easier.
Nice.
Yeah, and it was a reflex DC of 12. To avoid it. So basically it was just to avoid the breath weapon, right? Some of them made it, some of them failed. So it was really kind of cool. I gave them claw attacks, but their claw attacks only did 3 damage. It was just because the stone claws, you know, grabbing a character, it's just the fingers kind of dug in a little bit and caused a little bit of damage. But if the gargoyle actually hit with both of the claws on one character, I just basically gave +4 to the escape DC. So it just made it that much harder to escape. And then the gargoyle's actions is they're able to move their full speed, which was a speed of 6 or 30 feet. And what they would do is they'd grab these characters, run them along the roof, open the door, and throw them down the stairwell. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like how, although they're there to help you, they're still going to push you down a flight of stairs.
Well, pretty much, yeah.
Put in the... Teach you a lesson, maybe you break your legs and not be able to get back up.
Exactly. And it was very automatic. The players at the table were like, whoa, how can they do all this? I said, well, they're just magical gargoyles. And, well, the last thing that I gave them is the opportunity attacks on the gargoyles because they were shifting through, right? They're just single-minded just to go put these characters behind the barred doors again. So these gargoyles, I gave them that opportunity attacks against this movement gains disadvantage. So any character trying to do opportunity attacks, because then they just go down that much more quickly, right? So opportunity attacks had disadvantage, which means that you roll 2d20 and take the lowest one. So it was quite interesting. But the gargoyles essentially had the ability to throw the character in the room, open the door, throw the character in the room, and bar the door again. Now, the funny thing in this is that one character decides that I'm sick and tired of these gargoyles. I'm going to break the doors open. So he kicks the door with a 25 strength DC, which is like almost impossible. 22, because the strength bonus was 3, so he rolled a natural 19. And he kicked the door open and broke the bar on it. So the next time the gargoyle grabbed a character to shove him down the stairs, he did the exact same thing. Shove him down the stairs, then close the door, but the bar didn't lock this time, right? So it just kind of went around, and the door kind of flew open a little bit, but the gargoyle didn't notice because he was just trained just to pretend to close the door, right?
Yeah.
So like a robot, he's just following programming.
Exactly. And so then what happens, they find, with Vargas now, we go back to Vargas, they concentrated on Vargas in the first round or two. And I think in the first round, they had put him down to 10% of his hit points, and I had boosted him up to 77 hit points. He was only supposed to have 44 or something.
Okay, I was going to ask you, in D&D Next, what were his hit points numbers like?
44
was what the book said?
44 was what the book said. I bumped it up to 77, and they still had him down to about 10 hit points, one-seventh of his hit points in the first round. So basically, I teleported him away, dimension doored him away, down two levels. And he managed to find or to grab some healing potions, heal up, and come back two rounds later. Meanwhile, they were attacking Karis, and Karis was attacking them. But she was, like you said, a little bit kind of crazy. She was reveling in the storm and throwing these storm bolts at them and all that stuff. Then Vargas came back up, and Karis saw that Vargas was getting pummeled, and all of a sudden she snapped out of it. I made her snap out of it a little bit earlier, and she actually went down to the ground and started attacking the PCs. When Vargas was killed, a lightning blast just came down and hit her one. I kind of used your idea too, Derek. Lightning just came down, bang, and just struck her once. And then all of a sudden, she fell to the ground prone. And then all of a sudden, you see her look up and her eyes are clear and the storm starts to break away. And and that's pretty much it. So I don't want to talk about the ending yet. But yeah, so it was really interesting. It was a lot of fun. One of the players had an interesting take, so we'll talk about that in a bit. But how did your ending go, Craig?
Well, so as I mentioned, it was a TPK. Basically what I had decided to do, because, I mean, I don't want to be like, all right, you're dead, you don't get to find out what happens. I decided that to sort of take the characters and give them some kind of an ending, and I didn't want them to be too much of a downer of an ending. So basically what I had said was that, first of all, they did kill Karis. So, I said that they were able to delay her ritual from completing long enough that, of course, with this huge storm and all this trouble at Helm's Hold, Neverember had already sent out another group of adventurers as well to try and assist the PCs in taking it down. By the time they arrived, chaos had ensued, and it was a difficult struggle. Helm's Hold was just totaled, so a lot of the patients were killed in it. So subsequently, we had Zan dead. What was the villain of the last Neverwinter? I can't remember her name.
Seldra.
Seldra.
That's it. I always want to say Sabine, but I know it's not her. Seldra was toasted as well. And pretty much everyone else, except for, I made sure the Prophet Rohini and Brother Satarin were saved from that attack. But they were able to take out Karis. And basically I said that, Helm's Hold was devastated. Neverwinter was a little bit damaged too from this major storm. But for the most part, they were okay. And the town got together and helped to rebuild, or helped to start the rebuilding process, I should say, of Helm's Hold, because, you know, the length of time that Helm's Hold has stood as a beacon in the darkness, basically, like sort of a place of sanctuary, even during the years of the spell plague, you know, they weren't so willing to let that go. The Prophet Rohini led up the charge in you know, rebuilding the Tower of Helm's Hold. Of course, she had her own vested interest in what was underneath, so she had her own sort of select team to do that. But because of the noble sacrifice that the players had made in order to slow down the process and let them overwhelm her in the end, was, you know, they had a statue of each of the characters made and placed at the front of Helm's Hold as sort of like the protectors of Helm's Hold. And that type of thing. So I tried to give them sort of a heroic send off, and so the big sort of ceremony happens, big state ceremony. But Lady Nidris was so beside herself with grief, she could no longer stay in Neverwinter because of the tragic demise of her son. So, you know, she left, she skipped out of town, and rumor had it that she may have even taken her own life in her grief. So it was a downer ending, but it was also. You know,
that's really inventive.
Even closure, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really inventive, and it's yeah, it's kind of cool. They can go around saying, "Hey, last season of Encounters, there was a statue erected of me."
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I didn't want them to go like chumps, right? Like, oh, everyone died, and oh man, you guys just screwed up bad. Like, they went out and they're remembered as heroes. They laid down their lives for, you know, for the good of the realm, kind of thing.
Nice.
And then sad.
I felt happy with it. I think a couple of the players were still a little bummed out of the fact that they died. A couple of the guys who had come there were like, "Well, I didn't realize you could actually die in encounters like this. I didn't realize this could happen." So, you know, part of me, I also felt bad that, you know, that it turned out the way it did. But I think also at the same time, it was a learning experience for me, definitely, and also for the players as well. Just sort of how everything came together on several different levels. I mean, a lot of them didn't have a lot of resources left by the time they got to this encounter, so they didn't have a lot of ammo to go in there with.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? And then, I mean, yeah. Again, teamwork was great at the beginning, and it kind of fell apart at the end, so there's a lot of different things. But at the same time, I was sort of at that point where like you were saying, Derek, with, you know, at the other table, you know, where you don't want to have that hollow victory. And I was at that point where, like, I could, you know, go that sort of cop-out way, you know, and I don't mean to say that to put anyone else down, because that's certainly valid if the group really wants to do it like that. But to me, anyway, I felt that, you know, I want to let the dice fall where they are at this point. Clearly, this is where this is going, and, you know, I have an idea how we can end it anyway. So that's the way I chose anyway.
Nice.
Indeed.
So with my group, in the interest of time, we sort of fast-forwarded a little bit at the end. Like I mentioned, the fight itself could have easily gone on a little bit longer. But it was clear to me that, you know, the party had enough, although some of the characters were, you know, only a few hit points above zero and had no surges left. It was pretty clear that the ones that were healthy were going to be healthy enough to take everything down, especially since the party kept using the lightning almost every round with four characters trained in Arcana. Like, that helped them considerably. So we just basically said that they managed to disrupt the lightning ritual enough that it stopped, and that sort of brought Karis out of her funk. An interesting side note, though, one of the player characters made a religion check and rolled a 2. And he's like, I'm like, well, what is this religion check for? This was like halfway through the combat. He goes, well, we've been encountering a lot of Asmodeus cult. Do I think that this ritual will possibly summon Asmodeus or give the sorceress powers like an Asmodeus avatar? And I was like, absolutely, that's what's going to happen. You've figured it out. And if this ritual comes to an end, bad things will happen. Oh, my God. Because he rolled so poorly. But I just rolled with it. I'm like, yeah, of course. You absolutely know that. And he's like, oh, my God. Guess what, guys? This is what's going to happen. So I just...
That's
I
perfect.
Just, he made these assumptions. And then I was like, yep, that's, you know, yeah, we're going to go with that. So when dude revealed his tattoo of the Asmodeus brand. He's like, oh, see, I was right. I was right. So it was just fuel for the fire. I was like, oh, I love it when players flub a roll and just don't realize that you know, rather than me saying, you don't know, I feed them the wrong information.
So yeah, like, I love doing that too.
So at the end, I didn't like the idea that Vargas was, you know, going to go insane at the end. It didn't work for me. Like, I think I played him as more of the troubled soul. Like, even though it listed his alignment as evil, I had him more as, you know, evil characters never see themselves as evil. I see it as the means to the end. Like, he was willing to do whatever it took for the love of his wife to cure her. And so when she regained her consciousness, I had it more that he was so remorseful that he stopped fighting and he was willing to accept whatever punishment was deemed appropriate, knowing that his wife was going to be okay. And so I had to tweak the text a little bit, and the party basically said, well, you know, he's going to get arrested. We're going to bring him to justice. So I said, yeah, no problem. You guys can go ahead and do that. Now, what the party did say they wanted to do was, since during the fight, the bard had made the arrangement with Chertilifax to try and help him, when they came back later and like after the fight, when they sort of went down into Helm's Hold and Vargas's hold over the NPCs had been lifted, the Prophet Rohini realized something was up and took off. That's at least what I figured would have happened, because she knew that Vargas would probably be able to point the finger at her, since I didn't have Vargas go insane. And so she took off. So they're like, well, where's Chertilifax? What's going on? I'm like, oh, he's gone. And they're like, what do you mean he's gone? I'm like, oh, you also realize the Prophet Rohini's gone. She left in a real hurry. And they were like, what the hell? And I'm like, well, you know, the dragon alluded to the fact that he wasn't acting of his own volition. It's possible that she might have had something to do with that. And they're like, oh my God, we're going to have to totally track him down and help him like we said we would. And that was sort of the thread that was left hanging. You know, they accepted the reward money. They returned Zan to his mother, who was eternally grateful. And they said they would help out with Helm's Hold. Karis basically agreed to stay there and help rebuild and help her husband, you know, repent his sins. And I think had this been a home game and we were looking for the next chapter, it would be the chapter to find Chertilifax and try and free him from whatever hold the Prophet Rohini may have over him. So, indeed. And with my other group, it was basically a TPK, but the DM, you know, whiffed on it, and we ended up living. But at that point, we didn't really care how it ended because we all knew we were really dead. So, yep. And Mark, what about your guys?
We finished off with defeating Karis. They ended up killing Vargas. She snapped out of it, but she was kind of mad, and the characters went back down, I guess you would say. Even after she said, oh, I feel better. So then they knocked her out. But after she had come to, they had tied her up and such, but the storm had dissipated. They saw that she was sincere in what she had said. And she says, you know, my husband made some bad choices. You know, it's really something. It's extremely unfortunate. She was really, really sad and upset. But she said that she wanted to stay and help rebuild Helm's Hold for the damage that she's done. And what she wanted to do also, she wanted to research in Neverwinter. She wanted to research ways to bring her husband back. Because overall, she said he was he's an extremely good person who, just because of his love for me, did a whole bunch of bad things. And I think that is a redeeming quality, et cetera, et cetera. And the party basically ended there. I guess some of it had to do with the time. We had done a lot of discussion about the next season. At that point, we were talking about characters and everything. So the second thing also is I kind of... You ever have those players sometimes that just kind of go over the edge and you want to do something cool at the end and they just ruin it for you?
Yes. Usually it's apathy. They get to a point where it's over and they're just like, okay, this is done. Let's move on. And it's like, well, come on, man. Don't you want to know whatever? And they're like, no. That's usually how it gets handled in my home campaigns a lot.
Oh. Well, my... This one player, do you remember the guy that wanted Lady Nidrissus to have his baby?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. How'd that work out? Though.
Okay, so we wrapped that up also, and she agreed, you know, but not to do the whoopee with them, do some sort of magical insemination or, you know, whatever that way.
Denied.
So, magical artificial insemination.
Magical artificial insemination. She's rich, right? So she doesn't, there was no condition that had to have sex. She just had to bear his child. So did something like that. So I made it like that and took that thing away from him. But throughout the season, it was getting on my nerves where every time we met up with some female, he wanted to mate with her, copulate, and have a baby with her. And I found that that was a really cool idea for Lady Nidris. I thought that was all right. It's a good backstory to have a royal child and all that kind of stuff like that. But it got annoying after a while. And then he tried to do the same thing with Karis, right? He says, oh, you know, Karis is knocked out now, so now she's going to get knocked up.
That's crossing the line.
Yeah, that's getting into dark territory there.
Yeah.
So while Karis was laid out on the ground, the characters were discussing on what to do. He said that he was going to have a little quickie with her and all that jazz and just try and inseminate her. And I'm like, come on, really? At the end of the season, you don't want to know something a little more epic instead of just, you know, jumping her bones and stuff?
All right. I
just got turned off, and it was like, okay, so this is what happens. Well, no, this is really what I want to do. And I said, no. I said, you're not doing that. I said, this is the only time I'll say no is when it's getting ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. No, that's inappropriate at the gaming table. Even at a home game, I wouldn't, you know, there's a line and that sort of line. Definitely say something to the player outside of the game, like,
yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
There needs to be boundaries, and that's clearly one of them.
Yeah, and I
mean, you never know, you know, if another player at the table might have had some kind of like weird or bad experience in the past that this is sort of like touching on something personal to them. So, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's getting a little off topic, but yeah.
No.
So long and short, that's how mine ended. It was kind of anticlimactic, but well, not for him, but yeah. So long and short, that's what it was. And I was a little disappointed in the way it played out at my table, but I was really happy with the way that the encounter of the season ended.
Yeah, no, it was a very cool combat. It was, it's one of those ones where there was something for everyone. And I know that one of the challenges we had with the first group I played with was none of the characters had ranged attacks. And none of us realized that we were able to, like, we didn't really understand how to try and use the storm to make attacks. It seemed like, yeah, we could try it, but we needed a crazy number, and she's clearly a creature. Like, the description almost made it sound like Karis had, she was clearly described as a storm sorceress, everyone just assumed she had a strong lightning resistance. I think we had already determined that Vargas had lightning resistance. And so we thought, well, why would we waste our time trying to do this lightning power that's not even going to hurt her? And since none of us had ranged attacks, we had a real hard time getting close enough to her to do any damage. Like, it was fortunate that once Vargas was bloodied, Karis was lowered to the ground. But even that took a long time considering how wounded our party was. But, you know, the elements were at least in there that if you had an all melee party, they could try and harness the lightning, or they could use the winds to potentially fly up. Like, it was just, there was clearly elements there to make sure that no matter who you were or what choices you made and what class you were playing, like, there was a way for you to still be cool and do good stuff and have fun with this encounter.
Nice.
I got to be honest, I am actually looking forward to stealing bits and pieces of not even necessarily of the encounter specifically, but just the elements of how all the pieces fit at the end. Like, I really liked how it all came together in the end. And, you know, I got to be honest, I wasn't loving the first couple of weeks of the season. I wasn't really sure where it was going to go, but I knew that it was building to this. And I certainly feel that the last couple of weeks were definitely the top of the pyramid. Like, it was worth the climb to get there.
Yeah, it was a lot of RP at the start, a couple of good combats in the middle or near the end, and then after that it was kind of like a good decent RP element session, and it came out on a really high note, I found.
Yep, I agree. I think that, you know, as we've already said, that just the encounter itself was like it had a very climactic and atmospheric feel. Like, the whole building of the storm over the season, it comes to this big crescendo at the top of this tower, and it was a great sort of set piece to end it off on.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's about it. I don't really have anything else to add. You know, I'll be doing my traditional season report card on Dungeons Master next week during the week zero for next session. Since we don't have anything to talk about from a field report, I always do a report card. So anyone who's looking for my thoughts on what I like, didn't like, and might have done differently on the encounter as a whole, by all means, check us out next week.
And next week I'll be posting also on the Wednesday for week zero an interview that we've had with Eric Scott DeBee. Kind of a season finale closure type, you know, shoot the bull interview. That's that turned out to be come out really, really interesting. And yeah, we'll be posting that for the week zero session next
week. And just to be clear, this is our second time talking with Eric Scott DeBee. So if you listen to the first one a few weeks back, this is a different one. So definitely check out this one as well.
Yeah, the first time we were a little more restricted with what we could say for fear of spoiling, so we were a little more open with it now.
Absolutely.
We've basketed all the Easter eggs.
Indeed.
Many of them for sure. Yeah.
Little sidetrack into God slang.
Oh, here, let me put this forward to you again. I just had one more thing I just remembered. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of anybody for the finale actually helping Vargas get Karis to finish her ritual that would cleanse her, make her sane, and everybody lived happily ever after without combat? That they grew, they worked together to actually defeat Chartilifax?
Both of the groups I ran with tried that. I tried it as the player initially and thought I was doing a great old job with my 20 diplomacy, but once the dragon came in, that sort of set everything off. And with the group that I ran this afternoon, or this evening rather, I basically made it clear that as long as they continue to do what Vargas is telling them, and basically he said, go back down the stairs, he was good. I told him straight up, I said, he is readying an action. His condition is you move any closer. And for a full round and a half, nobody moved closer. Everybody started moving back towards the stairs, and they just sort of watched what was going on. And then when they heard the dragon was coming, they all sort of freaked out and forgot that he said, don't come any closer. And they all ran everywhere. And so as soon as the first guy moved, I'm like, okay, triggered action goes off. Boom, he shoots you with the lightning staff. And they're like, oh, it's on.
So you would have let her complete the ritual to make herself sane and they live happily ever after?
Well, no, my plan was to pretty much do what I did. I didn't bring the dragon into like the third or fourth round.
Right.
And I had the dragon intentionally attack Vargas. And so up until then, I didn't have Karis do anything. And so that was how I was going to do it, is once the dragon attacked Vargas, Vargas was going to lash out, and he didn't really care who he attacked. But he was like, you know, that's what, all he needed to push him over the edge was an excuse. That was a good enough excuse. And then I knew as soon as he lashed out, the party wouldn't be able to restrain themselves. They would fight back. And once they did, Karis would be open season on everybody. But, I mean, being encounters, had it been a home game, absolutely no problem. I would have had no issues with them just doing a talk encounter and letting it play through. But with the D&D encounters for the finale, I think if they had just helped them and talked them down and let it go through, like, that doesn't seem like a very exciting ending.
No.
Or you can...
Although now that I've been thinking about it for a few hours, I could probably have come up with something. I could have had Chartilifax come back, and then the two NPCs could have been like, oh, we're so weak, help us, don't let the dragon take us or something. And it could have been a whole other thing. I'm thinking about that now.
Wasn't Chartilifax dominated, though, by Fergus?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember.
Because he fought with him in Session 6. He fought with him.
I looked for that because my group dropped. Technically you're right. But it's not really clear. Basically, Chartilifax's mind is pretty bent from being under Rohini's control. And Vargas' presence and Vargas interfering has just broken it even further.
Right.
So, it doesn't... I was looking in the encounter, and you know, maybe I just missed it, but I couldn't find any outcome where, you know, oh, if Vargas dies, this is what happens to Chartilifax. Because that's what happened to mine. Vargas died and Chartilifax was still kicking around on the board. So basically I had it that, you know, they could try to do certain things to sort of talk him down or talk him out. But, you know, they kept fighting him, and I just had him. His mind is so broken that he's just there and he's fighting. He's doing, you know, what he thinks he needs to do.
Right. Cool.
You know what I mean? Like, his mind was just so ruined.
I just want to put that forward because it was curiosity because of the diplomacy at the start, right? It says, yeah. You know, I want to cure her and that's it. I'd be like, as a good character, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's plausible. So let's get this done.
Yeah, we had four guys trained in Arcana, and they all, once they got that information out of them, they're all like, yeah, can we make Arcana checks to see if he's telling us the truth? Like, as far as does the magic of the storm have the ability to do that? And the first guy rolled, like, in the high 30s. I was like, oh, yeah, this storm is totally magical. It could be very well be doing what he's describing, and you guys have a pretty good reason to believe that this is what's happening. And they're all like, oh, well, let's help him. And, you know, between that, from this week and last week's the same thing, right? Like, if you stealthed past, you potentially could have avoided the combat altogether. And in a home game, I do stuff like that to challenge the party and see, like, you know, let the players who aren't necessarily super combat guys have a chance to show off their other skills. But in a weekly game like this, you almost have to have some combat. So although it's in there as a possibility, you know, realistically, you know that even if they do that, it's going to be boring.
Right. Cool.
Indeed.
So that brings us to the end of yet another season.
Yes, and a good season on top of that. Started off a little slow, started off a little wobbly, I guess, in our eyes, but it's...
Yeah. And I think it was also an adjustment coming from the previous season, which was radically different from what we had been doing before.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. It was a hard act to follow, but I think by the end it certainly... I actually like the end of this season better than the end of last season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely, for sure.
I agree, and I'm looking forward to this season, though. This season looks fantastic. Search for the Diamond Staff again?
I haven't read it yet. I mean, I glossed through it when I got it, but I'll be giving it the thorough once-over in the next week or two.
Read it cover to cover, and I think it'll play out beautifully.
I'm really excited about it just for the I know me and Derek were talking about earlier running D&D Next versions for ourselves for Tables of the Various Stars that we run it at, but also the tie into the game day. It seems like a very, very nice big event.
Oh, so you guys are going D&D Next, so you're not sticking a fourth at all?
Well,
we'll see what the market dictates.
Yeah. Sure. I think there's a lot more interest, though, in Next as opposed to the previous two seasons at this point now. And I think a lot of it, too, is to do with the game day tie-in.
Right on.
But we'll find out for sure on Session Zero.
I was going to say, just again, for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, the game day, D&D game day happens on June 15th, which is a week from Saturday. Assuming that you're listening to this right when we post it. And it coincides with Free RPG Day. And the D&D Game Day adventure is, if, correct me if I'm wrong, called The Vault of the Dracolich.
That's correct.
And it's similar to a Battle Interactive, if anyone's played any of those with Living Forgotten Realms or any of the other Living campaigns, where a number of different parties sitting at a number of different tables are actually all part of a huge army that is trying to accomplish a common goal. And in this case, they're storming the lair of the undead dragon to try and retrieve an item, which will be a pivotal piece of what's happening in next season's encounter. So the game day event is actually like a prelude to next season's adventure. And the D&D Game Day is run in D&D Next exclusively. If you play Game Day, have a character, run through it, the character lives, and you want to use that character in encounters next season, as long as you're continuing to use D&D Next, that is encouraged and allowed. Not only that, if you play on the Game Day and your character earns treasure, and I believe every character should end up with at least one additional magic item, you are allowed to keep that and carry it through into D&D encounters the following season. Any of the loot, any of the XP, any of the gold that you acquire. So there's certainly additional motivation to go to the game day if you are planning to play encounters next season.
Indeed.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, thanks again for for coming on to the podcast and talking Storm Over Neverwinter, and hopefully you're back next season. I think everybody's back next season, and
I think so.
Yeah, and we'll
excellent.
So we'll have a lot of good chats, and I guess we'll see each other, or we'll talk to each other beforehand anyway. But after session one, we'll come back and we'll chat, and we'll see if we can get some input maybe from Sean Merwin this season too. He said he was going to play it, right? So.
Oh, yeah, very exciting.
Sure. Anyway, all right. So this concludes Storm Over Neverwinter, D&D Encounters Season 13, Session 8, the finale. And join us next time. Until then, have a blast.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit dungeonsmaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D encounters. That's 20footradius20ftradius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.